to A Wealth of Women's Stories with Manjeet Minhas. We have a special episode for you today. It's our Best of Season 2. My name is Marissa Sorinese, and I'll be your host for today. We are celebrating the podcast's second season with a look back at some of the most powerful and insightful conversations between Manjeet and our guests. Today's episode is an opportunity for us to share some incredible unaired content from the inspiring women who shared their stories with us. And it's a chance to look back at some highlights. A Wealth of Women's Stories was created with the goal to share experiences of empowerment, breakthrough, and perseverance from women from all walks of life. So listen in and join us here, where women's voices are not only heard, but celebrated. The views, information, and opinions expressed are those of the featured guests and not those of IG Wealth Management.
I'm Manjeet Minhas, one of Canada's top entrepreneurs, and so excited for you to join us today. Through A Wealth of Women's Stories, IG is carving out a space where women's voices are heard. If you're looking for insight and inspiration through powerful storytelling that will resonate with anyone looking for the answers to the questions that we as women ask ourselves, then this series is for you.
We begin with Erin Burry. Erin is the CEO of Wilful, a company that helps simplify end-of-life planning by making it easy for Canadians to protect their family by creating a legal will online. In addition to being an entrepreneur, a leader, a speaker, and a startup advisor, Erin is also a new mom. During the episode, Erin shares her experiences with Manjeet and related that having a child helped Erin to better understand and have empathy for her customers.
So you mentioned that you have a daughter, and how is that going? How are you integrating? I'm not going to say balance because I hate that word. How are you integrating as a mom and as a CEO her into your life and your family, I guess, into your entrepreneurship life?
Yeah, great question. I mean, because we run the company together, we always knew that we wanted to incorporate having a family into the ethos behind Wilful. I mean, I think it's very frowned upon, maybe not publicly, but there's this sense that if you're a female founder or a female executive at a tech company, that having a family slows you down or sets you back. And I think I've very much gone into this with the idea that it will absolutely do the opposite. For us at Wilful, our number one customer is a new parent who wants to create a will to protect their children. So I have always seen having a child as something that only helps me to better understand and have empathy for the customer that's coming to our website. And in addition, I mean, it's that phrase, if you want something done, give it to a busy person. I've always been someone that juggled professional speaking, the wine tour business, my main business. I'm a very efficient person. And so I kind of looked at this as a challenge of how can I actually restructure my day, make it work for my family and make it work for me professionally. And we're also in COVID. So it's been really, really lovely to be able to work remotely. We've gone fully remote, to be able to pop out between meetings and give her a kiss, to be able to still be breastfeeding and to be able to manage that with my workday. So the transition has actually been really nice because we've been able to set the tone as the leaders at Wilful. And we've also been able to adjust well because of COVID. So I'm actually pleasantly surprised at how empowering it felt to be an entrepreneur having a child. When you have a job at a company, you have to abide by their parental leave policies. You often feel a sense of guilt if you take longer than you think they want you to take. True. And I thought it would actually be a hindrance to be an entrepreneur having a child because I couldn't just check out for a year. That's part of the bargain when you're an entrepreneur. Wow. You can't just check out. But the benefit of that is you design the life that you want to have. You have the autonomy to implement child-friendly policies. And again, like I said, I think you have an opportunity to set a very positive example for the folks who might want to work for you, who also have families or are thinking about starting one in future.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I love there that you talk about your passion and your consistency and both of those things, how they contribute to a fulfilling, happy journey at home and at the office and when it's all intermingled together. And I totally agree with you in that not only in your job and in your position, that it gives you a unique perspective, but also an insight into maybe what your potential or your existing customers are feeling or looking forward to that maybe you didn't have before. Which I don't think everybody always thinks that they're going to have. I think that a lot of people, their perspective can change, and rightfully so, as you're growing and you're responsible for another human, which is sometimes the first time around, definitely is something that we all, I think, grapple with a little bit differently. But I think that's really insightful that you are self-aware to understand that it actually gives you a deeper understanding of maybe what the questions or how you can frame your product or your service to your customers.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
When Manjeet spoke with our next guests, I imagine many of our listeners suddenly had the urge to eat something sweet. That's because Manjeet had a chance to talk with the owners of a bakery, Jenna Ray Cakes. Twin sisters Jenna Hutchinson and Ashley Kosowin run a successful bakery business in Winnipeg. The duo have spent the last 8 years building both their company and their brand together. Jenna and Ashley have 3 bakery locations in Winnipeg, have written a best-selling cookbook, and are also judges on the Food Network show Wall of Bakers. In their conversation with Manjeet, the sisters' teamwork really shone through. Here we listen in as Jenna and Ashley share their journey to entrepreneurship and explain how working with and supporting one another was so critical to their success.
I describe it as like I just had blinders on. I knew what I wanted to do and I was so laser focused on it that I wouldn't let anyone talk me out of it. I knew it was going to be good and I knew that I had a skill that I hadn't seen in the city. And Ash was a big champion of that too, because she has such a good eye and such impeccable taste that if she thought that what I was doing was beautiful, then I knew that it was going to be a success in whichever way it was going to. I just thought I was just going to make enough just to pay myself to make cakes for a living. That's all I kind of, that was my goal. So I knew that I could do that.
And so then a few short weeks later, I guess, Ashley, the shop was so busy that there's no way Jenna could run it on her own. And that was when you stepped in. So talk to me about how you decided, because, you know, it is a decision to get into a sibling's business, but also decide that you're going to stop doing what you're doing, because it takes time, it takes energy, it takes definitely some personal relations, and I speak from experience being in business with my brother,
yeah.
To say that I'm going to jump in there and help you.
Yeah, well, I'm a graphic designer by trade. And before I Generate Cakes, I was working as a creative director at a local wedding magazine. So I had just left that job and I was kind of in the middle of a transition. I was like, maybe I'll do freelance design. Maybe I'll apply for a few other jobs. I think I can float by on freelance for a little while just to give myself a break from like a kind of chaotic past year in the magazine business. Mm. So Jenna had opened the store. I had helped her with like installing the floor, doing the design of the like interiors, helping her with the menu. It was just a really great time in our lives to kind of come together and work on something. We truly never thought that the business could support me as well. Like when Jenna was talking about it, when we were talking about the beginning, we always just saw it kind of to be like a small business where Jenna could really pursue her passion for cakes. There was enough of an industry in Winnipeg that could support her and maybe like a storefront person. But even the storefront, that was just kind of a means to an end. Like when people come in and want to talk about cakes, they can also take home a cupcake and a cheesecake or whatever, just for that was never going to be a big part of the business. So I didn't really see how I would fit in there. I certainly never thought that I could kind of be part of the business and just eventually just be on my computer being in charge of packaging and design and like company growth. But that's the phase that we're at now and it's wonderful. But yeah, it was just great timing and we really truly get along. I think when I first came on, I was like, okay, I'll come and help you and then I'll bring my computer so I can do some design work on the side between customers. And I don't think I was ever able to
get rid of that once.
No, I don't think that ever happened. So it was just like a very natural, organic, slow progression of us just building something together. And like, we kind of just looked at each other one day. We're like, oh, I guess we're doing this. So it was just very organic. I remember like being writing an occupation on a form and I'm like, what do I put? Like, I'm not really a baker, but I'm not a graphic designer anymore. And then it took me years to like clue in. I'm like, oh, entrepreneur, that's what I should be putting down. Like, it was never a goal.
That's really interesting because, you know what, I saw this survey done and people were asked, do you think you're an entrepreneur or do you know any entrepreneurs? And an overwhelming majority, especially women, said no. And I thought to myself, are you kidding me? And I think a big part of it is the definition of entrepreneur is so fantastic because it's so vague and big and large, but that's also the downside to the definition.
Yeah.
Is that nobody actually thinks of themselves that way until others start calling them that. And or they, like you say, check mark a box because there's nothing else to check mark on there. And it's so interesting because entrepreneur can mean so many fabulous things. It doesn't just mean one thing, because many of us also think that an entrepreneur is usually a male and not in businesses such as, well, cakes or something pretty. It always seems to be rough and tough kind of thing, right? Yeah. So that's interesting that even you went through that. And I love that you say that it was timing. Sometimes, you know, a lot of people dream that they have all these plans made. Yes, absolutely. I'm a planner too. However, one thing you can't plan is timing and some luck at the same time. Yeah. And that seems maybe true for you, Ashley, as to when you were coming in into the business.
Yeah, and I think so. I'm more of a planner. I'm more type A. I'm more organized. I really like to think, well, not think things through. I'm impulsive like Jen is too, but I think I would have had a lot more. I probably would have slowed Jenna down at the beginning in terms of like the business plan and stuff, because I would have wanted to think through or like see further ahead. So I'm almost glad I wasn't involved in that part of it at the beginning, because she just went for it. And it was a great time to get in there. And like, by the time I got in, we were already going, and like, we just had to like keep our heads down and bake.
Could not stop.
So yeah, it just worked out really well.
Yeah, and I guess anything's possible if you got enough nerve, right? Because that's sometimes what it takes. That risk-taking ability isn't within everybody to say, let's go. But sometimes, like you say, it takes other people to say, once it started at step two, to be part of the part of the journey.
Manjeet's next guest is the inspiring Beth Wilson. Beth is a community builder, and she says her happy place is where there's some significant change to be led. Beth sits on the boards of some incredible institutions, including Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto, which was ranked the top pediatric hospital in the world by Newsweek in 2021. Beth's professional career of over 30 years gave her many opportunities to further causes that she is so passionate about, such as the advancement of women in business and volunteering and promoting a leadership mindset. Along the way, Beth has won numerous awards for her dedication. In her discussion with Manjeet, Beth talks about the confidence gap.
So I read an article about you in CPA Canada's Pivot magazine that you shared your experience that when you were writing your final accounting exams, actually, that you really felt that you'd blown it completely. But in actuality, you made the honor roll and then later learned that you placed first in the country. Absolutely amazing. So why do you think you were so hard on yourself? And why did you feel maybe that lack of confidence or fear that while you were writing those exams?
Yeah, maybe a bit of context here to help our listeners understand. So those CPA exams at the time, they're held over 4 days. And it was that first day where I walked out of the building, I went home and I cried. It's a 4-hour exam. It's all built around one case study, and it can really shake the confidence of a lot of people. But, you know, I had a good night's sleep and I just tried to remind myself of how hard I had worked studying and how well I had done on practice exams. And then I went back in the next day and really focused. So I don't know that the CPA exams themselves, that how men and women experience them is different. But if you broaden your question, Manjeet, to the workplace and think about things like seeking a promotion or applying for a new role or being proactive about your compensation, asking to be put on big projects, there's no doubt in my mind, and research supports this, that women are less confident. Mm-hmm. And so what we're talking about really, right, is that well-documented confidence gap. Women want to be 120% qualified for a role mm-hmm. before applying, and men don't sweat it if, you know, they've got like 40% of the experience. Women are less proactive on their compensation. And, you know, I just read a research article recently that talked about this, and it said that women consistently underrate their performance and men overrate. Problem is, there's no real explanation as to why that is.
It's interesting that you say that, because I find that even in the entrepreneurship world, is that when women come looking for investment, they actually really underestimate themselves as to how much that they will get, whether they're qualified for investment and or whether or not they kind of meet the standards of what an investor is looking for. I always say a man will come in looking for 10 million bucks and a woman will be like, I think I need a million, yet their financials look very similar and so do their, you know, future perspectives. And it's interesting that you say that, because I think that maybe it's part of that confidence gap that is something that we really just want to be very, very good at everything that we do. And sometimes that's not always necessary. Good enough, as my mom used to say, is actually sometimes okay. Good enough and not perfect.
And I think the other issue is that women are socialized from when we're very young, that if we put our heads down and we work really hard and we're really good at what we do, that we'll be noticed and we'll receive what is fair. And then we also tend to take less risks. And I was thinking about this, if you go back to your days in elementary school, right? So even schools reward based on those sex differences really early, right? Girls mature a little faster. They're often more organized, a little more diligent. They work hard and then their grades reflect it. So it kind of reinforces that pattern of behavior, but that is not the secret to success when you get in the workplace, right? It's critical that you establish credibility through technical excellence, but then you have to be proactive. You have to take risks. You have to get out of your comfort zone. That's where the growth really happens.
Agreed. I couldn't agree more with you.
Manjeet's next guest brought an energetic and relatable approach to financial literacy to the podcast. The founder of Mintworthy, Vanessa Bowen is not your average money coach, and Mintworthy is not just another personal finance coaching platform. Vanessa inspires women to live life on their own financial terms. She says there is more to money than just the numbers. Vanessa works to create lasting financial change for her clients, and she makes a difference. Vanessa has been recognized for her expertise and has been featured as a money expert on CBC, Global News, Breakfast Television, and the Toronto Star. During her conversation with Manjeet, Vanessa spoke of the power of mindset. Vanessa says, for her clients, she always seeks to get to the root of what created the financial life her clients are living. And she says that all begins with a client's mindset.
Looking at my story, and then also looking at my clients and how we would create these plans for them and they would do amazing, but then they would revert back to old habits. And so it was very interesting. The first year of the business, everything for me just kept turning to mindset. And I just kept seeing all these different things and learning these different things about how our mind creates our results. And so I was really just almost like puzzle piecing things together as I was reflecting on my journey, reflecting on my client's journey. But it really came down to, what did I want Mintworthy to do? And I didn't want Mintworthy to just be another personal finance coaching platform. I really wanted to create lasting financial change for my clients. I didn't want to just put a Band-Aid on it and say, here's your budget, here's your savings and investment plan, go run with it. I wanted to make sure we got to the root of what created the financial life that they're living in today. So it really came down to, what did I want Mintworthy to stand for? And really me wanting to see how I can create that lasting change. So even inside the programs today, mindset's first. Like, my clients know, we don't talk about your budget. We don't talk about your savings plan or your TFSA RSP until we shift your mindset first.
Gotcha. And so you've definitely discovered there's more to money than just the numbers, and you became intrigued, as you described, with that. So I would say maybe even a little bit obsessed with that. And so your thoughts and your mindset impact about how money habits and behaviors evolve were really definitely the focus. And then you went on to become a certified practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, or an NLP. So tell us more about what an NLP is actually, and how that happened.
Yeah, so how I explain NLP in its simplest form is the study of how our minds are programmed, and essentially how our thoughts create our results and what we're experiencing in life. Or said another way, how your internal world is a reflection of your external world. And so when I went into this journey of NLP, and that's even a crazy story because I had heard about it, I had experienced it through this fluke session with someone. And I was literally in a coffee date with someone, and we were talking about how do we collaborate. And at the end of the meeting, she mentioned that a friend was offering NLP certifications. And that's how I jumped into it and got into this whole world of NLP. But why I did it was because, going back to what I said before, I really wanted to change my clients' mindsets, their relationship with money. But I knew that I had to be equipped with the tools and the knowledge to do that. So that's why I decided to become certified in NLP, so that I could actually have the resources, have the tools to create change in my clients at the subconscious level, so they can shift how they then see money, how they relate to money. Because how someone thinks will tell you how they act, you know. And it's been, in its simplest form, if someone just believes that they won't get out of debt,
right,
they're going to feel very hopeless. They're not going to feel very financially empowered. They're not going to believe that they'll have a great financial future. So how does that person act? They likely don't have a debt repayment plan. They are already in debt. So they say, well, I might as well swipe the credit card. I'm in debt anyway. So they create actions that perpetuate and align with the thought, versus someone who has this thought of, I can get out of debt. They are more financially empowered, and then they create different results. They actually have a debt repayment plan. They don't spend above their means. So everything is started from our thoughts, which create our results. And that's basically how I've taken NLP and bought it into the coaching.
Gotcha. So it's a lot of what we talk about in our regular lives, as far as even our skills or talents, you know, success in other parts in our life. You know, we talk about mindset, and I definitely am a true believer and talk about it all the time, especially, you know, with my mentors and mentees alike, about, you know, what you think you become, what you feel you attract, what you imagine you create. And it's about mindset in so many different ways. It's about, you know, like you say, that positive or negative mindset. Are you thinking in negative ways? And then you start to act and make those decisions in that particular way. And I don't think I have ever honestly heard about money being talked about or approached in that way. And so that is definitely very, very unique. I would say, I think I would ask as to how do your clients actually react to that? Because I know when I was on your website researching before we were talking here today, you had a really interesting, I guess, a survey, a questionnaire that you have your clients do. And I will definitely say I usually go through surveys pretty quickly because I could predict the answers. But all of the answers sometimes I wasn't thinking of were there. And it was, I had to read the questions and the answers multiple times over before I went through it. And even I was thinking about how and when I think about money, because your questions were not direct. They were not predictable, which I think is very unique, but also surprising, because I didn't really even think as I was taking your questionnaire, are we still talking about money? I had to remind myself.
It's so true, because how we relate to money is truly a reflection of how we relate to ourselves and how we relate to life. So you're absolutely right. It's all mindset, but it still is related to our financial life.
Manjeet's next guest was a true inspiration, who shared her story of triumph over tragedy
and her resilience that knows no bounds. Taylor Lindsay Noel was an elite Canadian national gymnast from Toronto who had a devastating accident when she was 14 years old that paralyzed her from the neck down. Taylor fought through adversity and paved a new path forward for herself. She went to school, became an entrepreneur, and founded Cup of Tay Luxury Loose Leaf Teas, a company that was featured on Oprah's Favorite Things list in 2020. Taylor was also recently named Entrepreneur of the Year by the Black Business and Professional Association Harry Jerome Awards, Canada's most prestigious award celebrating Black excellence. As a disability advocate and council member of the Premier's Council on Equality of Opportunity, Taylor took the opportunity with Manjeet to discuss disability and inclusion.
So let's talk a little bit about disability and inclusion. So 15% of the world's population discloses some type of disability. That's over 1 billion people. On a daily basis, people encounter the type of biases and barriers that you are definitely all too familiar with. So I would like to touch a little bit on the social media part of it, because I know you've encountered some situations online where people treat you one way, and then when they see you and meet you in person and become aware of your disability, they treat you differently. So how do you deal with that?
It's a little funny actually now, because you can always see it in someone's face. They're just taken aback. And I'm like, what were you expecting? Like a white male, a white male in business, or what, like a white female. And I think the being a person of color and being a Black woman in business is, oh, wow. And then you add the disability layer, like, oh my gosh, as if I'm like a unicorn or something out here. And again, it's just one of those opportunities to make sure that I'm sure you've had this, people in your family have said this to you, but sometimes in order to be in the same spaces, you have to work harder. You have to put and make sure that you don't make as many mistakes. And I think I had a lot of pressure to make sure that when I talked about business, that I knew everything, because they already have low expectations and I don't want to meet them. But now I just am being more comfortable as a business owner. I feel more comfortable just being myself and saying, I know that you wouldn't expect this of me, but my expectations of myself are actually far greater than what I'm doing now. So you can see me here today, but in 5 years, you won't even recognize me. And being confident in saying that, because I know that one, I will live up to that. And two, it'll shake up the perception of what quote unquote perceived limitations can be.
Yeah, you're so right. The first 10 years of my entrepreneurial career, I made it a very big point to know absolutely everything, not only about my business, but everybody else's businesses in the alcohol business, and every, you know, thing I could just eat it all up. And it definitely gave me an amazing base, but it was very time consuming. But also I felt like I was often trying to be maybe something and somebody that I wasn't. And so now I sometimes embrace when I'm asked something and I can say, I don't know. And I think that there's a lot of power in that too. I'm still, no doubt about it, very well researched and love to have all my I's dotted and T's crossed, because that gives me comfort. But it kind of calms my nerves down. But I would say that it is important to understand as you grow, especially as an entrepreneur, to be able to say, I don't know, or I'll get back to you, or figure that out, or know who to go to in order to get some answers and figure it out together. And I think that through the pandemic, many of us have also discovered that we can collaborate. We can, you know, help each other out, even if we're in the same industry, just as business owners, but as women, as people who are struggling and finding challenges, because being an entrepreneur is full of challenges and things we never learn. There's no rule book here.
I think that's really, you know, you hit it on the nail when you said through the pandemic, because previous to the pandemic, I didn't really talk to anybody, any other business owners, because I just, again, felt like I didn't really know a lot, didn't have business school background, and was almost intimidated to have a conversation. But one of my really close friends now, Layla, I'm sure you remember her from Happy Pops. She was on Dragon's Den, and she and I have been friends for a little while now, and I had an open conversation with her when I thought I was going to shut my business down. And she told me, hey, this is what's happening on my business. I know you see this online, but this is what's really happening. And it was one of those moments where I'm like, not everyone who I thought had it together has every single facet together. And those right. conversations and collaborations and being open to talking. And I'm the first one to say, I know what I know and I know what I don't know, but I'm always open to learning. And I think having that mindset as an entrepreneur and knowing that not everything that glitters is gold is so important, because otherwise you'll drive yourself crazy.
Very, very true. And I'm going to quote Maya Angelou, because I have this up in my office, because I know you're a big fan. You just told me that you do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better.
I love that one.
And it's very, very true, because we can't all be expected to know everything at any point in time. In my life, Manu has always been be 1% better every day before you go to bed. And I schedule that into my life in a variety of different ways. And I think that it is really important. We can't be expected to know everything, but we can have an open mind to learning. And I think that that is a mindset that the more that we have it and the more that we can teach those around us, we'll all be better for it.
Could not agree more.
We've had such a great second season of A Wealth of Women's Stories podcast, but before we go, we have time to hear one more story from Beth Wilson. As we look at the community that has grown from this podcast, the support for one another, the sharing, the encouragement, the inspiration, the celebration, we wanted our last story to focus on the importance of community. In our next clip, we hear from Beth as she talks to Manjeet about the importance of community, making connections, networking, and opportunity.
So I wanted to talk about your community involvement. And you, the last few years at KPMG, you were chosen to oversee community leadership. And a natural fit for the role you were given within your own, because of your own community involvement. And so you've sat on the Toronto Region Board of Trade. You worked with many charities like Ride to Conquer Cancer. I was shocked to hear it. And it's incredible that you've ridden 9 times yourself. That's fantastic. And so why do you feel that community involvement is so important, and especially for women who are looking to grow and develop in their career?
Yeah. So I was a Toronto managing partner at the time that that happened, and was thrilled when the CEO came to me and asked me if I would also be the national managing partner to lead our community leadership strategy. He felt that my background as a chief HR officer and a business leader combined with my own passion would provide me with the skills I needed to take what's kind of viewed as a soft area often, right? Community leadership or ESG, mm-hmm. and make it a tangible part of our business strategy. Now, that was a decade ago, and things have changed so much in terms of ESG. So I think most organizations are beyond having to make a business case now. But for individuals, and particularly women, there are innumerable benefits to community involvement. And I talk about this a lot when I'm mentoring. First of all, there's that deeper sense of purpose and fulfillment beyond your career, but closely linked to your professional skills that you can find. And I know a lot of younger professionals and leaders are really focused on that sense of fulfillment and how do I find purpose in what I'm doing? And community leadership can really give that to you. I also think that at an early stage, it's a real opportunity for you to lead sooner than you might be able to in your company. You know, you can chair a committee, you could lead an event, you might be fundraising, which is really just sales by another name. You know, you're taking responsibility, you have a seat at the table, right? You're seeing how a board works. So there's a real opportunity to step up long before you might be given that opportunity inside your organization. The other thing for me that I found is you're exposed to amazing leaders. So some of my early role models were the presidents, the CEOs, and board chairs from different organizations I was involved in. And it was an incredible opportunity to just see how different leadership styles work. Mm-hmm. You know, you learn about strategy, governance, different business models, operations. It really, I think, makes you more well-rounded when you're in your day job in your organization. And then, you know, finally, it's an opportunity to build your network and your profile. And I referenced this earlier when I was talking about when the boys were young. I didn't go out and do a lot of networking at night, but mm-hmm. I sure leveraged the networks I was developing from sitting on some of these boards. And that was effectively how I, you know, built and found opportunities at the time.
Yeah, that's really insightful because I've never thought of it that way. And when I look back, I always think that so many people, including myself, that I got involved in the community, whether it be through community boards or philanthropic organizations or charities, once I felt like I had made it already and I felt like I had something to give. And I didn't think of necessarily the get back. And I love that. You're right. It does give you so many opportunities to lead and just exposure to so many different styles of leadership, individuals, thought processes, before you maybe even know that you're ready or even actually discover what the other opportunities or potentials could be. And I don't think many people think of it that way. They think of community involvement as something that is at a certain time in my career when I have the time and the space and have something to give back. But I absolutely love that perspective from the other side is that you always have something to learn on that learning journey, but you do have something to give no matter what part of your journey and a career your path you're on.
Absolutely. And there's an important role there for mentors and sponsors to play too in terms of opening up doors and pulling some of those younger leaders and professionals, even if it's onto some committee work for a board. But I was lucky to have mentors that did that for me. And again, I think, you know, when you're thinking about how do you mentor or sponsor somebody, it doesn't have to be just inside your organization. You can create these opportunities for them out in the community as well.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that it was interesting to me, the first co-chair that I was of a board was of the United Way. And I couldn't believe how rigorous it was, and not only how demanding, but how really well operated and run the governance and all of those things, such as the environmental impact, the social impact, all the committees. It still is definitely, I feel, almost one of the best run boards that I've ever sat on, which is interesting because a lot of people think that they won't get as much out of a community board that they would or an organization that they would maybe a public or a private, but it's definitely not the case. And I couldn't believe, and still to this day, how many people that I have met that I have kept in touch with and seen in different walks of life from that one board that I sat on. And so I really do admire the time that anybody gives to community involvement, but also it gives them better understanding, I feel, as to where they are building a life and eventually maybe building a family.
Community, involvement. What a great topic on which to end our season. Talking about the connections and community and opportunities that come from supporting each other and celebrating one another's achievements. The themes of community and involvement really tie back to the goal of this podcast, to provide a place where women's stories of empowerment, breakthrough, and perseverance are shared, celebrated, amplified, and heard. What an incredible season of stories we've had. We want to thank our host, Manjeet Minhas, for all she has done to champion this forum. We want to thank our guests for coming over our past two seasons and sharing their insights and inspiring others. We especially want to thank you, our listeners. Thank you for tuning in, streaming, downloading, and sharing this experience with others. Thank you for listening. This podcast began to challenge the misconceptions and biases surrounding women professionals. And it's great to see it's a community where support, advice, and inclusion have connected women and allies in an authentic and safe way. We hope it has provoked some thoughts and discussions in your life as well. We hope you enjoyed this episode and the season of A Wealth of Women's Stories. If you haven't had a chance, please go back and listen to season one of the podcast as well. On behalf of Manjeet Minhas and everyone at the podcast, thank you. I'm Marissa Sorinese. Thank you for listening.
This has been A Wealth of Women's Stories, hosted by Manjeet Minhas and presented by IG Wealth Management. The views, information, and opinions expressed are those of the featured guests and not those of IG Wealth Management.